SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, on this Tuesday. And looking ahead, Saratoga, I got to bring in Bill Gallo, the New York Turf Writers, the grade one, the other grade one, the companion, and to the Smithwick. And we do have to dodge raindrops maybe again tomorrow, but all right, so be it. We'll do it. Bill Gallo, good morning. Bill.
Yes, I'm here.
There we go.
All right. Morning, Better. Steve.
How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. Doing great. Dodging the raindrops. You're right.
Well, we should be fine for Thursday, but we'll see about tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm hoping we run, even if it does rain. As you know, I've told you and your listeners from time to time, rain is. It's not a negative for us. It's actually a positive. If anything, it's safer. They go a little bit slower. And of course, as far as the turf is concerned, we're on the outer portion. We're on the outer 30 feet of that inner turf course. So whatever turf damage we do is to our own turf. So I'm hoping that Martin, leaves us on, even if we get a few raindrops.
Well, the abbreviated, the abbreviated schedule and getting the grade one in, and of course you have to reboot the Smithwick too, as it turns out.
Yeah, I mean Martin is very good about that. When he does, he doesn't cancel a race; he'll postpone it from a Wednesday or a Thursday to the following Monday, which is we appreciate that. It is a bit of a burden, obviously, getting the horses to come back. Our horses are not stabled here; very few are stabled here. Only a few jumpers are here. Shepherd's got a couple, and Elizabeth Boss has one or two. Most of our horses ship up. And if we postpone, obviously they have to ship home or find a home for 4 or 5 days. But we'll see how it goes. As I said, we're getting late in the meet, and I'm hoping we can stay on even with the softer conditions.
Well, let's talk about this group. We had Sean Clancy on TV on Sunday, and there's some very interesting things that happened that really enhanced this Turf Riders.
Yeah, the Turf Riders is an extraordinary race. It's not, number one, it's our biggest field of nine so far, and it's a comeback race. Obviously, it's the second leg of the two Grade One races up here, with the first five finishers coming back, which is great, and plus the international intrigue, Gordon Elliott sending two over. And that's not only did he send two, he sent two very, very good ones. In fact, it's this 8-year-old Claire Cam, the Frenchbred, just won in Ireland on August 1st. And that's a major race, the Galway Plate. It's a $300,000 race, and he won it rather easily. It is a steeplechase over the bigger fences, so it's a bit difficult to translate, but somebody had to be the high weight, and those are pretty hefty credentials. And Claire Cam, he earned the high weight of 158 pounds, and he's going to give away to 18 pounds as to the low weighted overwhelming. So it'll be interesting to see how those farmers fare here. It's Claire Cam and the Game Changer from Gordon Elliott. It'll be very interesting. I know the horses came over. They got out of Newburgh, and I believe they went down to Pennsylvania, and they actually schooled at Ricky Hendricks' place in Unionville, Pennsylvania. And I believe they schooled yesterday, and apparently the school went very, very good. So it's an intriguing race for sure. It should be. It's a grade one. It's at Saratoga. And, the American contingent is tough as well. Show Court ran a terrific race here on July 30th. And the runner-up, Iranistan, is back in. The weights have adjusted slightly. The winner, Show Court, picked up four. Aranistan got beat a length, and he picked up a couple. And Shepherd's also has All the Way Jose, who certainly has the back class to win a race like this. He won last fall at Belmont Park. So it's I'm excited about the race. Certainly the rains will be gone by Thursday, so we're definitely going to get the turf riders off, and hopefully we put a good product on the racetrack.
Well, this group, and as I mentioned, the enhancement, Gordon Elliott with his pair, as you talked, that's a terrific portion. It's amazing, Bill, how these races, and I think about any of the high level steeplechase that we talk about, the Iroquois and so on, and then of course when we get to Far Hills and what it means there, and how aggressively international participation is being encouraged.
Oh, absolutely. And, this is what's interesting about the Saratoga program for us. It really is a build-up, and it's a build-up for Far Hills. It's we've got our premier race of the season, October 20th, and it's a major event. The purse is $450,000. There was $400,000 last year, $450,000 this year, and in 2 years it's going to be a $500,000 race. It clearly attracts international attention. It's what Guy Torsolari, our president, and the director, and he's also the chairman of the Far Hills Races, but that's what he's intending to do. And I think it helps everybody along the line. It helps the Saratoga program, as you see by these entries. It's going to help the Belmont race as well. We go to Belmont on September 20th, and that's a key prep, and that's what happens. It's the Smithwick leads into the Turf Riders, which leads into the Lonesome Glory at Belmont. And then, of course, the big the crescendo and the big race at Far Hills. So it's becoming more and more of an international game, and that's something that's a good thing. Both of Gordon Elliott's horses, in fact, were sold to an American interest, Ross Bryan Farm. They're going to have three entries in the race on Thursday. George Mahoney is the top man at Ross Bryan, and he's intrigued by foreign racing. He's intrigued by some of these foreign horses, and I think ultimately it's going to help our game here because it's going to bring over horses, quality horses that can run at Saratoga, Belmont, and Far Hills. So the program, that part of the program, is working very, very well.
Well, the domestic players and the 1-2-3 finishers coming out of the Smithwick show court and the amazing week that Arch Kingsley had, show court and Iranistan with this comeback opportunity. I mean, it does feel like Iranistan, if he ran the Smithwick three or four times more, he's going to win his share. And anything, I saw Jonathan the other night, and I didn't ask him actually about the race, but I know that he had to be disappointed coming short in the Smithwick.
Well, it was his first time in Grade One company. He may have been at the moment slightly disappointed, but I think in the overview, I think he was pleased, and I think he was pleased enough to run him back. Number one, don't be confused by the weight too. The reason Iranistan is lightly weighted at 145 pounds is he is a 4-year-old, and our scale of weights is there's a 9-pound spread between 4-year-olds and older horses. So if you tack on 9 pounds there, that's a significant. He's the second high weight in the race. He is a very, very good horse. He was the even money favorite, but as I said, it was the first time in that kind of company. And he got beat, but he ran a terrific, terrific race. Show Court, has got that flat speed himself, if you go back in his PPs. So it's a speed-oriented race, as we've talked about many, many times before. This race stretches out a bit. It's just a tad. It goes from 2 1/16, which starts at the head of the lane, and it stretches out to the backside. So they'll start between the two fences on the backside, and they'll jump one fence in the 2 3/8. to make for a total of 9 jumps in the race. So that little extra distance, certainly might have a factor in the race. You're going to have to carry that stamina a little bit further. It's definitely a jockey's race too. It's critical to time it just right because, once again, as you know, and most of the listeners that follow steeplechasing might know, we do not jump the last fence in the stretch the last time. So there's a good 5/8 of a mile flat run from the last fence down the backside to the wire, and that means you've got to have that speed and that late kick, and you've got to sustain. So it becomes a jockey's race, when to pull the trigger and how much horse you have left.
Well, we're looking forward to it and going through this field of 9, and whether we run tomorrow or whether we run Thursday, depending on if and when the rain comes. If it does come, it's supposed to be done by early afternoon. Top 4 finishers out of the Smithwick, as well as the winner of the Kaiser, new member, Jack Fisher, and the imports, 3 first-time North America, and that includes horses from Gordon Elliott, one of the absolute masters when it comes to the jump game internationally. And this group, those 3 imports, that Optimus Prime, too, that Sean had nice things to say about him.
Yeah, he's got some very, very nice form, some nice recent form. He put together 3 wins in a row in late last year and early this year. I can't say I know these horses intimately, and it's as I said, it's hard to gauge from there to here, but they're here for a reason. Typically, the English and Irish horses that come here like a bit firmer ground. And if we can get a horse like that, sometimes, we'll get horses that need Lasix, which obviously, the Lasix comes into play here. You got 3 first-time Lasix horses. But there's certainly a question mark on all 3 of the foreign invaders, which will ultimately stay here. But we'll see what happens. I mean, on class, they certainly have a lot of class, and I think class matters. Whether they have the foot speed, I'm not sure about that. They might be more suited to particularly the steeplechasers. They might be suited more to the Far Hills scenario where you've got a bigger, sprawling, more undulating race course as opposed to the Saratoga 7/8 on the flat.
After this, Bill, we've got one more.
We've got one more on the 29th, yes. Straight never won, too. We bring that race back from a month earlier, the one that Boss Man won. So we'll close out the Saratoga season on August 29th, and then we'll head down to Belmont for 2 very important races, these comeback races of same 2 races, the Novice and the Grade 1 Lonesome Glory, on Thursday, September 20th.
Well, even under these circumstances, with a bit of an abbreviated run, Saratoga Steeplechase, one of the great traditions, those races too, Bill, we previewed the Monmouth sequence. We watched those 2 maiden wins and also the allowance win, and those looked like they went very well, and some horses that'll feed in for the fall.
Oh, absolutely. Those races at Monmouth were critical for us. We've got a really nice relationship now between Monmouth Park and Far Hills. Monmouth's going to hub the betting for Far Hills this fall. That was a really good spot for us. We'll get one of those maiden winners from Monmouth, Dancing in the Rain. Kate Dalton will run here on the 29th. The other one, Belisarius, actually is going to wait for the Belmont Novice race. He's going to jump right into the Novice division. So, once again, our summer program is a matter of taking it one step at a time and getting horses to compete 3 or 4 weeks later. So I'm very happy about that.
Well, that was a nice afternoon for Kate and Bernie Dalton to take those 2 maiden wins.
Yeah. And that's Swelligant, the horse that's in tomorrow for Neil Morris. He won that little overnight handicap which was a really nice effort, and as a string board for this race, the novice race, the Michael Walsh tomorrow.
Well, the New York Turf Riders Cup handicap, and yeah, I don't know why, but the form. I just noticed this. We're not getting the number that of the running of the race. What running of the Turf Riders is this?
This is the 77th running this year.
77th. Well, I can tell you that Sean Clancy told a wonderful story on. Did you see the show on Sunday?
I did not. But I'm sure I know the story. I've heard Sean.
I've heard John tell it 50 times?
No. He's got a lot of good stories. He's a very good storyteller.
Well, he told the story of his Turf Riders win, and basically being, you know, the last rider in the room, and the interval between, you know, the opportunities to ride and a horse that had washed out as a flat runner, and it was really a fun story, and it's one of those things, like when I discussed it with Arch, when Arch Kingsley, when he won the Smithwick, and you know, winning as a rider and then winning as a trainer.
Yeah, I mean, those are things that, I've heard the stories from our guys. I mean, winning a race, winning a jump race, particularly a grade one stakes race over jumps at Saratoga is a special thing, regardless of the purse. Well, you know, whether the Far Hills race is 450 or 500,000, and this race here Thursday is 175,000, it the importance of winning at Saratoga is enormous, not only for the rider but the trainer and the owner as well, and for the sport, quite frankly. It's our greatest stage. It's a great opportunity. We as a group really appreciate NYRA offering these purses and these races for our very, very top horses. So but you win one here, it's memorable. It doesn't surprise me that Sean or Arch would keep on remembering that great moment.
Well, the horse was Hokan, and Clancy, for those, I'll put the link up. It's on YouTube, and he talked about when the horse was with Leo O'Brien, and he would train. He was by Trepolino, and notoriously nasty offspring, and Sean talked about him muling and locking his front legs and throwing, not only throwing Sean to the ground, but then turning around and trying to double barrel kick him. It wasn't enough that he put him on the ground. He wanted to punt him 30 yards.
That's funny. Yeah,
well, that's great.
That's old Sean. Well, a few other people have wanted to kick Sean as well. So,
well, what was fun about it was that it was in 1998, and then in 2000 2 years later, or I guess it was 90. The win was in 98, but the Turf Riders, but Sean was working him for Leo O'Brien like 2 years earlier, and he hadn't been on him in 2 years, and then here he turns up as a chase horse, and kind of a, you know, one of those interesting dynamics that the game produces.
Yeah, for sure.
Bill Gallo, I appreciate it, and if we can run tomorrow, we'll run and jump. Otherwise, we'll do it Thursday.
Well, if we don't run tomorrow, hopefully we'll just postpone it to the following Monday.
But Monday.
I've got my fingers crossed, and I'd like to get two races under our belts.
Absolutely.
This week, and then we'll finish it up next Wednesday. But thanks for having me on, Steve. Appreciate it.
Bill, tremendous. Bye. Bill Gallo and the New York Turf Riders
Cup handicap. And, 2 miles and 3/8. We'll take a timeout, and when we come back, as I thought, Leo Powell was out on a horse, and so we'll postpone him, and we'll get him later in the morning, maybe at the bottom of the hour. That's coming up on the bottom of the hour. He might almost be done, but we'll catch up with him, and Dick Powell, too, as well as Brian Sanfratello. Looking forward to Jeremy Plonk. Get some advance on the Travers. Countdown to the Midsummer Derby, as they say. 6 o'clock draw today for the Travers. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. If you want to hit big at Saratoga and Del Mar, ExpressBet is the only way to play. ExpressBet customers have access to free handicapping information, like wager guides for the Traverse and Pacific Classic, and expert tips from renowned handicappers like Eddie Olchik. Plus, new ExpressBet customers will receive a $500, $100, or $20 welcome bonus when they sign up today. Learn more at ExpressBet.com. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races about, 25 into hour two. Just went over the national fences with Bill Gallo. Dick Powell joins us. And Dick, what's your historical success with the steeplechase wagering?
Well, success would mean I've picked a winner. It's not good.
The worst one was there was an Irish shipper that came over in one of the stake races, and I thought he just laid over the field. He ran like he was tons the best, and at the wire he gets caught by a David Jacobson trainee. Remember that one?
Yeah.
David won a stand. Well, I'm like, I can't win. So there's been no success. I watch them, you know, on the watch. I watch them when I have European racing on in the morning from Ireland, England, France, you know. But me picking, it's like the old joke about the guy who calls up every night to get the basketball betting lines, and finally the bookie says, and the guy's a complete loser, so the bookie says, you know, we don't have basketball tonight. I got hockey. And the guy says, hockey? What do I know about hockey? So steeplechase racing. What do I know about steeplechase racing?
Well, I'm surprised because you, I'm a little surprised that you haven't dug in and tried to get an angle. I mean, that, and I remember the horse you're mentioning is Mabu. And
yes.
Jacobson had, that was funny because he said he knew the horse was actually dangled in a claim prepping for the Turf Riders. And yeah, Davey said you don't have to, they already know how to jump. It's not like I need to teach him how to jump. He said it seemed like an opportunity, and he was right.
Well, and it's been a great foundation for trainers that have then gone on to great things. Michael Dickinson, Aidan O'Brien's wife, I believe she started out with jumpers, and then her license went over to Aidan. Vincent O'Brien had jumpers, you know, Jonathan Shepherd, people like that, obviously. So it's for them, there's not a big line between the two. I'm trying to think of the guy. Is it P.J. Mullins? There's a guy in Europe that he wins jump races, major jump races, and then he wins the cup races, you know, the Goodwood Cup and Ebor, distance-type races and stuff.
Sure, so Willie Mullins, yeah.
But yeah, exactly. But for me, it's just, I don't know. I recognize late in life, Steve, that I only have so many brain cells. I have to employ them judiciously. So I get if I get fascinated on a couple of races a week, well, that's probably going to use up valuable brain cells that I need for the rest of the week. So I've, like I said, no success.
I love it. Well, I thought I'd ask because you've got eclectic when it comes to international. Obviously, I mean, going back the long association that you had regarding Dubai, and you know, always think to, you know, get your input on international action and Australasia as well. So thought maybe you were potentially a steeplechase savant.
No.
No. The answer, answer.
I'm the first word of the two words, savant.
Well, then let's turn our attention to a couple of topics that we visit weekly, and we'll talk about Presque Isle, certainly, and the stake yesterday, but we've got Brian Sanfratello joining us, too, with some interesting Pennsylvania news and some things going on. But let me get Saratoga from you first. And another interesting weekend. We're weathering whatever storms come through. Alabama was, I think, a really important lesson, Dick, for handicappers. And, you know, being able to look beyond the figures and appreciating what a distance like a mile and a quarter does and how it changes the dynamic.
Yeah, I think the difference between 9 furlongs and 10 furlongs is just enormous. And the only horse that I can think of that really wasn't a 10 furlong, excuse me, wasn't really a 10-furlong horse that was able to win was Chief's Crown winning the Travis. He didn't run well in the classics. They knew he wasn't going to get that kind of distance. But with a little bit more maturity, a little bit more training, relaxation, he was able to get to 10 furlong. But usually the horse kind of hit a wall. The one angle that I like to look at, and unfortunately it's not a big angle anymore because these horses race so infrequently, is the race over the track angle. And I've always felt that was important up here. I think it's important to come here, to acclimate, to get used to the surroundings, to get used to the various logistics of racing at Saratoga. And I remember with Royal Delta. I mean, she ran in the first race. I guess it was the coaching club Oaks back. And you know, she looked bad. She ran third. She had a Jose Lascano aboard her. She was, like, overstriding, not grabbing the track. And she came back in the Alabama. And I loved her in the Alabama. I bet her real good in the Alabama. And she was just a different horse. Eskimo Kisses had the benefit. Race over the track. This was her second start off the layoff. And I was a little worried with her about the pace getting away from her, that she falls so far behind that is she just going to lose contact. But then you put an aggressive rider like Jose Ortiz on her. Not that he kept her up near the pace, but Jose's going to save ground. And he made a bold move at the top of the stretch, and he kind of, I don't know if I've read anything about it, but he kind of took away Coach Rox's path at the top of the stretch. Like, there was a hole, and obviously Jose's horse was quicker and got to the hole faster, and Coach Rox didn't really have that sustained rally. But then once he made that hole, then it was just his race. So Ken McPeak, and another guy that in big races, you can just expect McPeak's horses to run their A game. Now, if their A game's good enough, they'll win the race. But Ken just has a history of producing, not always long shots, but producing on the big days, that he points to horses for the big days. He had this one ready. The pedigree was a little suspect because to honor and serve, you know, he was not necessarily lighting the world on fire as a young stallion, but mile and a quarter, just everything went perfectly, and Jose gave her a terrific ride. But I do like that horse, of course, horse race over the course angle, except in a 7-week meet, we should have, you know, 3 or 4 starts, and now we're lucky to get 2, so that second start, I think, is always the improving start, and she improved by lights and bounds. I like number 6, Figuerella's Queen, and she
so
could not have been worse. Oh, she was awful.
Well, it's not that she was awful. It's not that she was awful. What was she doing? What was she doing behind the leaders, pressing pace?
On 3 wide, you know. If you got to go to lead, go to lead. If you can't go to lead, you know, do something else. But don't go 3 wide, 22-second first quarter.
I thought
her pedigree and the 12-pound weight shift was going to add up to a mile and a quarter, where she's going to be right in it. And I mean, I didn't have a ticket. I've been on the phone, but if I had a ticket, I might have ripped it up going into the first turn. That was it. No shot.
I couldn't believe it, and I had the same when I wrote the race up, and it took me a good portion of the morning to kind of make decisions about how I wanted to approach it, and I finally ended up feeling like there's potential for a pace collapse here with, you know, real, you know, 2 horses that you knew were going to be on the lead and had potential to go at it, and then another 3 that might have, you know, found a spot early to contribute to the pace. So I said, all right, Figuerella's Queen, Midnight Bisou, and Eskimo Kisses. Those are your 3 off-the-pace runners that are going to put in runs. And I was astounded. As it happens, I was sitting way down at the end of the clubhouse, the box, all the way down. And so when they came by, I couldn't believe she was there. I got to reach out to Brad Cox and see if they my only assumption was, Dick, that they shifted their strategy based on the way the racetrack was playing throughout the day, where it looked like you had to be near the lead to have any chance.
Well, and me being a conspiracy guy, Brad trains Monomoy's girl. She wins the coaching club oaks. She's skipping the Alabama to go to the Cotillion. So now we have another horse from a stable that, now that she's gotten back on dirt, pretty good, ran well behind Talk Move to me, gets a 12-pound weight shift, extra furlong. Brad Cox has this one ready for this one. So that played into my whole melting pot of ideas. And like everything else in racing, Steve, it all sounds good until the gate opens. And then you're like, wait a minute, that's not how we planned this out. But, and then the reality is she probably just wasn't ready for grade one company.
Possibly. We'll see what, but it's funny that we hadn't discussed it. I didn't see you Saturday, but I had the exact same thoughts that, you know, I wanted somebody off the pace, and I would argue that Eskimo Kiss's pedigree, and I'll discuss this with Sid Fernando tomorrow, was quite nice for the trip, and it's remarkable that the minute To Honor and Serve goes to Korea, he immediately gets two graded stake winners, including a grade one winner. It's uncanny.
Yes. And Korea, Turkey, Street Sense goes to Japan. He takes off. and being by a Mystic, being out of a Mr. Greeley mare, which at first glance you'd think sprint, but Mr. Greeley's by Gone West. And Gone West, when you look at his average winning distances of his offspring, is extremely high. Gone West is a source of stamina, despite having fast horses like Mr. Greeley. So with Bernardini as the grandsire, there was more than enough. And especially, I don't know if it was just lack of speed or Ken trains her to come from behind, but, you know, she'd been going to the back, finishing good, and then everything just came together for her. And a great ride by Jose, because if Jose tips out three wide, I don't know if he gets there, even though the margin was pretty strong. You know, sometimes they tip out and they lose their momentum. So he had all that momentum, and he just kept going forward, and the hole was there. But the hole was there because she was good enough to go through it.
Yeah, I mean, she burst through, and it was obvious at the eighth pole she was going to just throttle him.
And the Alabama is one of my pet peeves, that if you know anything about Saratoga racing, how is the Alabama not a $1 million race?
What was it, 600?
Yeah. I mean, the Sword Dancer. Come on. If any race other than the Travis and Whitney should be a $1 million race, it's the Alabama. And I don't get it.
That's
like
a fair point. You know, I hadn't thought necessarily about that, but it's a fair point. I mean, if the Cotillion's a million,
but that's someone else's money. This is Naira allocating their resources, and they put all that money into the Sword Dancer, and you know, to get, you know, one European like a Flintshire or someone like that, if you want to do $1 million for the Sword Dancer, fine, but the Alabama should be a $1 million race.
No, that's not an unfair suggestion at all.
I have lots of pet peeves, Steve. If you have enough time, we could go through.
Well, you've been known to be curmudgeonly. That's fair.
I have opinions. The worst thing to do to me is, hey, Dick, what do you think about this? And then, like, the person splatted against a wall. Why did I ask that?
Well, no, I that's a point well made. Very much so. So
and
some
you
other.
You and I and Seth were on Timber Ghost on Sunday.
Absolutely.
Jimmy Jerkins.
Absolutely. Sunday was the best day of the meet for me. Good. Yeah, just a bunch of things. I'll tell you one. You know, it's funny how when you talk about meet themes and you know getting on certain directions, and I think it's very obviously you handicap each thing individually, but you try to sense certain themes or trends. I'll tell you one guy that I've been completely oblivious to, and that's Ron Moquette, who I'm very friendly with, and I've missed all three of his winners.
Well, he's just so dangerous in dirt sprints. You know, you see it at Oaklawn, and up here, I'm very cognizant of him in dirt sprints. I'm always paying attention to that.
Well, how about Petrov changing up grabbing the lead? I mean, I was like, oh, and you knew if you didn't bet him, you knew the you were a loser 60 yards in.
Yes.
He was winning. It was obvious.
And I believe that was Jose again. Was that Jose Ortiz who put him on the lead?
Might have been.
Pretty sure.
Might have been.
Pretty sure
it
was.
It could have. Yeah, I think you're right. Let me see. I got it here.
But he like bolted from the gate, and he hasn't shown that kind of gate speed before, and he just broke the race open early, and so all the other speed horses become chasers, and the closers couldn't get there, and he just crushed them.
He does a great job, and happy to see him. He also had that 11-2 winner going back to Friday, Frosted Ice, that won by open lengths.
Yeah, no, he's someone I pay attention. I don't pay a lot of attention to Oaklawn, but I'm well aware of Ron goes there. Obviously, has dirt sprints. He does great at leaves there. Goes to Kentucky, then brings the string up here, and all those guys eventually figure out which horses to bring, which horses are going to fit. And I don't remember, Steve, this many horses who've had their starts at another track winning here. I mean, you can just go down the Licks Parks and Delaware and Finger Lakes and Arlington, and just one after another shipped in and won. And many of them have been bet. You know, it's not like the old days where like an Ed Perdue could ship in from Finger Lakes and not only steal a New York bred purse, but maybe make a betting score. You might get the purse, but you're probably going to be 5-2.
That's been one of the themes that I've been able to latch onto, and the Finger Lakes shippers as well as the Mid-Atlantic players that have come in and run well. That's been a productive area.
And Gary won the stake race there yesterday.
He did with the Hitter Once More, who likes that racetrack too, and took over and led him around and then was pulling off. Got a 98 buyer.
Well, I saw the final time. I saw a replay of the race. I saw they went 44 and changed from mile and 16, 137 miles. So, yeah, that was quick. Good for Gary.
Yeah, that's a nice one. Now we got to get a couple of wins here before Labor Day for Super G. We've got our 2-year-olds that are coming up, and I think Carlisle Bell, she'll get a chance next Friday, going 7/8. So turn our attention, Dick. Let's talk about Presque Isle and what do we know? Watch that stake last night.
Well, we ran a 9-race card last night instead of the carved in stone 8. We ran 9 and did $1.3 million in handle. So it was a good night betting. The Tapita track played very fast in the sprint races. When jocks asked their horses, the track was giving back that energy. In the two-turn races where they kind of dawdle, most of the times were slow because the paces were slow. But in the sprint races, the first race went 21-4, 44-4, 5 claimers went 57.57, and then the third race was 18 claimers, and they went 109.91. Dr. Coy went gate to wire. And the stake race came up, and that was actually a slow pace. I mean, 52 and change for those caliber fillies was not that fast. So Hotshot Anna is just sitting off the front runners, and when Gallardo moved her, just dominant. So she comes home 23.68, does 6 and 108.89, and off of that early half, that's smoking fast. And then there was a race right after that where Mineralogy gunned to the front 21.72, 44.49, never looked back, won it in 109.31. So very tight Tapita track in the sprint race. Now, if you go back and look at the two-turn races, you're like, oh, that was, you know, it's hard to gauge them without separating them. And I've always said that. And if you're like me and you use the Briss Ultimate PPs, the speed biases change once you get beyond one turn. Up to 6.5, speed does extremely well, not only at Tapita, but other synthetic tracks. But then when you get to 2 turns, then the pace slows down, and they finish good, but they just, unless they go out real fast, they're not going to run fast final times, and therefore speed figures suffer. But it was a very quick track last night. The winner was very good. And I heard you early in the show talking about, you know, Arlington and Delaware and Presque Isle.
Crazy.
And Woodbine and Canterbury. The Indiana Downs and Thistle Downs. So it was just a tremendous accumulation of fillies and mares running all over the place. The three-year-old fillies. Not fillies and mares, excuse me. But yet form held up with Hotshot Anna. And she looked very, very good. And she'll be tough in the next one.
You know,
they go for the good money.
Well, and I mentioned the third-place finisher, Jessica Krupnik, and the match series that, of course, Presque contributed to. And there's still the mile, which will come mid-September. But one thing that, I don't know if you have people, you know, that have followed what's gone on with the match, you know, Alan Foreman with us when the series kicked off, and also, you know, have had steady updates, Jim Dunleavy from the forum, but the numbers, interestingly, Dick, the match series they've been tracking what it's done for handle, where the races have gone, and it's been a real bonanza for the racetracks that are involved.
Well, last night showed that, and with the full field, the betting on the Satnam Lace, I got it in front of me. No, an exact pool was 50,000 a try with 40. The super was 25. Where are the whips? My eyesight. I can't find the whips betting. But, I mean, it was obviously a big night. No, the whips was 70,000. So it was a race that did over $200,000 total, but the big field, Because normally what sometimes happens with us is we'll get a big field and then not everyone ships. So they enter, they poke around, they see the race came up too strong, whatever. So we could get 12 and maybe 8 or 9 run. Well, last night was great because that starting gate was pretty full. And 10 horses race. And other than the favorite, it was pretty competitive underneath. Now, if she runs her race, she's going to win. And she ran her race, she did win. The second place horse, Crazy Sweet, had won 4 straight races at Prescott. This is her first loss of the year. So she's for Glenn Wisman. So she's now 4 out of 5. I think she's won 8 times at Prescott in the last couple of years. So she's a big, big horse for course angle. She ran well, and there was some traffic in the stretch, and there was a claim of foul against Trevor McCarthy. Was dismissed, but it got tight. It got tight in the stretch. But Hotshot Anna, she had already broken the race open, and I just thought she looked awesome. I just thought she was tremendous, and I would not be surprised in any spot that she shows up in that she will not be extremely competitive.
Well, tonight you got some ideas.
Yeah, let me find Tuesday. A little bit of a messy desk here, Steve. Today is Tuesday. That would help. All right, there we go. Tuesday, August. No, that's Sunday. Can you play some music while I'm looking for
it? No, actually, Dick. And dig them up.
It would be nice if I know it's on. I never saw my desk. Maybe we should do Skype and... you could watch me do this.
Well, that, I don't know if you want. If that's, I don't think that's a great idea.
Okay, Tuesday, August 21st. Yes. The opener, Kevin Rice has this My Patronus and had 4 starts over the synthetic on the Tapeta. And then, ironically, he shipped him to Mountaineer, and he jogged. So he goes to the dirt, and he guns to the front and wins by 7. So now he comes back here against 25 claimants. He had already run pretty well against Mating Company, and I don't know if it was just the dirt or just some kind of wake-up call mentally, but I think Mike Patronus going 5.5 from an outside post where he can press the pace with Nate Vickers, I think will be a big force. It's 5-1 in the morning line, and I think that one. If in other words, if we get last night's track tonight, I think he could be long gone if gunned from the gate, which I fully expect. And then I look for the ones that might be more than just a favorite. So as I glance through, and these picks, as always, are available on PrescottDowns.com. Just go to racing. They're right there. Race 5 is a 5-furlong sprint. Now, I'm kind of going against the grain here by going with the 10 horse, because this is the type horse gets a wide trip. And you'll say, well, gee, I got a wide trip. And I'm like, well, yeah, you had the 10 horse. What'd you think you were going to get? But Little Who's Who from Tim Girton ran against this condition claiming level the last 2 times, beat him by a nose, came back and ran fourth. I mean, beat Nawan as a 2 by a nose, came back against Nawan as a 3 with an even race. But that was from an inside post where she seemed to have trouble. Now she draws back outside. But the big thing is he gets Pablo Morales back aboard. And at 6-1 morning line, that's a pretty nice price because there's not the greatest feeling. One of the other horses I like here is the 11. So the inside horses didn't intrigue me that much. And I don't have a ton of speed, but I think I can get out in the second flight and be clear. So race number 5, number 10, the old dime store. You remember when Harvey Peck used to...
the 5 and 10. That's great.
And remember when OTV used to do letters, not numbers?
Sure.
And the Frank Hogan Daily Double was D and A. Frank Hogan was legendary district attorney in New York City. when Harvey used to do the race recreations on WNBC radio, he would call that the Frank Hogan Daily Double. DNA pay $58.
Right. It would pay $58. And of course, on track, it had paid $61. And they had screwed you out of the rightful price.
Very true.
Dick, I appreciate it. And any pre-Travers draw thoughts about this field?
No, just, it was really disappointing. Hofberg came out.
Yeah, it's too bad.
And I like depth. And when you lose depth, it affects the dynamics of the race and everything else. And he looked like he was coming up to the race really well, that the curling moved him forward and another move forward, which Mott gets the race over the track, so
sure,
he's going to be super dangerous. So that was unfortunate. I just have a negative on Good Magic getting 10 furlongs. You would think a curling, it would be right up his alley, but in the bluegrass, when he took the lead, I know you're not looking to win by 10 because you're saving energy for the Derby, but he didn't run his last furlong that impressively. The Kentucky Derby, he ran tremendous, but couldn't compete with Justify in the last furlong. Okay, who can? But Chad immediately said, no, we're not going to the Belmont. And he came back in the Preakness. So that told me not only is he not going to get the mile and a half distance, but he might have some, not stamina issues, but he's not the biggest curling. He's not your stereotypical curling. So I just have doubts about him getting 10 furlongs. So for me, it's like, okay, I hope he's the favorite, and I hope I can find someone to get the overlay on.
Well, there are 10 others.
Yeah. You going tonight, or?
No, we're having people over.
Okay. I'm not either. I know you're out and about, and I'm playing Scrabble Junior and Uno and my grandkids. They won't leave me alone.
I love it. I love it. All right. Well,
that's my Saratoga.
Don't run up the score on them with triple letter score. All right.
We play some game and they beat. they get such a kick out of beating Poppy.
No, absolutely.
And I'm not losing. I'm not losing on purpose. I'm trying to win.
I love it. I love it. Dick, thanks a lot. We're going to talk to Brian in a little bit, too.
Care.
Brian Sanfratello.
All right.
Yep. We'll take a top of the hour break and come back with Leonard Powell. He's, as expected, he was on a horse and came back from the work. And maybe we'll find out. Maybe it's one of his other stake runners. After Fatal Beret wins the Grade 1 Del Mar Oaks, Kent DeSormo. Sormo's so good over there. He's good, period. Amazing. He's a fascinating racetrack character, DeSormo. Leonard Powell joins us next. Talk about the Grade 1 win.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Fun in the Sun is ExpressBet's summer treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the surf meets the turf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with ExpressBet. And while you're at it, don't miss ExpressBet's $100,000 Fun in the Sun handicapping competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $4,000 for first, $2,000 for second, and $1,000 for third. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, the top top four finishers will win Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seats, a $12,000 value each. Pre-registration is now open for account holders only. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool fun in the sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet Saratoga and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete fun in the sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.